cooperation with the War Shipping Administration, Columbia brings you It's Maritime, a half-hour variety dedicated to the men of the Merchant Marine. On board are Roger Ferguson, the veteran of Anzio, Sicily, and North Africa, able seaman Charles Albert Simpson, Joan Brooks, Columbia singing star, and by courtesy of the U.S. Maritime Service Training Station at Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn, the Maritime Service Orchestra under the direction of Warrant Officer Philip Lang and yours truly, Joe Wheaton. On deck right now as we cast off and head out to sea, the orchestra salutes a proud and mighty warship and the grand state for which she was named, Oklahoma. Aren't usually as keen on pinup girls as men in other branches of the service. However, a girl they'd like to see in every port, a girl they often hear on their ship's radio, is Columbia's special guest for this evening, Miss Joan Brooks.
Ahoy! Ahoy, mate.
Now, wait a minute, Joan. Just because we're both land lovers, you don't have to give us away with that ahoy stuff. Don't you know seamen don't talk like that?
Don't they ever say ahoy, Joe? Not even to a member of the opposite sex? Well, what do they say when they see an attractive girl? Oh, I always thought they greeted a flat-foot floogie with ahoy, hoy.
Oh, brother, and so early in the show, too. Well, what's it going to be, Joan? What are you going to sing?
Joe, now, I don't mean this as a pun, but I thought I might hit the high seas with a little tune called I Don't Want to Love You.
Dream.
gonna love you like I do.
Like these, with every available ship in the merchant marine being loaded to the gunwales with war materials and sent to our troops across the seven seas, the War Shipping Administration is calling on civilians with experience at sea to return to their former jobs and to man the ships which must be sailed for victory. Thousands of men all over the country are answering this call. Mates, oilers, able-bodied seamen, engineers, cooks, men who have not been aboard ship for years. Men like this patriotic American who stands before me now. Able seaman Charles Albert Simpson. How old are you, Mr. Simpson?
43.
You married?
Yes, I have a wife and two children, a boy and a girl.
Fair enough. Have you been at sea much?
Well, not very much lately, but I was in the Navy for 3.5 years. I joined up during the last war.
The last war? Hey, wait a minute now. You're only 43. Weren't you a little young for that last war?
Well, I was 16 when I joined up, but I didn't exactly tell the Navy that. I sort of added a couple of years.
I see. Yeah, you're not subtracting a couple of years now, are you, to get into this war?
No, I'm really 43. Besides, there's no maximum age limit for seamen. Experienced men are needed badly. It doesn't matter how old they are.
Well, tell me, Mr. Simpson, what did you do in civilian life?
I'm a stationary engineer, Mr. Reed.
And what does that mean?
Well, I work on engines of all kinds, factory engines, power plants. I keep them running in good order, and I repair them when they break down.
I see. Well, and you haven't been aboard ship then since you left the Navy over 20 years ago, huh?
Well, I made a few trips on the Great Lakes in 42, but the rest of the time I've been on dry land.
Tell me, how do you feel about going back to sea after all these years?
Pretty good. I've kept myself in fairly good shape, and once you've been at sea, there isn't much you forget about it. You see, Mr. Weeks, a merchant marine needs men who have been to sea, because there isn't time enough to train inexperienced men for the job. The war can't wait until new crews can be trained. Ships have to go out now while the big push is on.
And is that why you're signing on again?
That's the main reason, but I've got a kind of special reason of my own.
What do you mean?
Well, during the last war, my ship brought back most of the Rainbow Division after the armistice, and they'd seen plenty.
I should say so. The Rainbow Division was really a rugged outfit.
Yep, they'd been through everything, and they kind of looked it, too. Many of them were casualties, and lots of the men I spoke to were pretty banged up. But you should have seen their faces when they pulled into New York Harbor and saw the Statue of Liberty. They looked as if they'd just been born all over again, and I felt the same way.
I can imagine.
That's my reason for signing on again, Mr. Weeks. I want to go over there and help, so that I can bring back some of the boys from over there again.
Thank you, Mr. Simpson. Petty Officer Lenny Gaynor at the helm for A Rovin'.
In Sheepshead Bay, there lives a maid. Mark you well what I say. In Sheepshead Bay, there lives a maid. And she doesn't go for the old gold braid. I'll learn no more a rovin' from you, fair maid. A rovin', a rovin', since rovin's been my ruin, I'll go no more a rovin' from you, fair maid. as I like. Don't start so bright. Mark you well what I say. Her eyes are like two stars of bright. Her face is fair, her step is light. I'll go no more a roving from you, fair maid.
A roving, a roving, this roving's been my ruin. I'll go no more a roving from you, fair maid.
Her cheeks are like the rosebud's red. Mark you well what I say. Her cheeks are like the rosebud red. There's a wealth of hair upon her head. I go no more a roving from you, fair.
A roving, this roving's been my ruin. I'll go no more a roving from you, fair maid.
I sat her one day upon my knee. Mark you well what I said. I sat her one day upon my knee. She said, young man, you're rather free. I go no more a roving from you, fair man.
A roving, a roving, this roving's been my ruin. I'll go no more a roving from you, fair man.
Sometimes when you come off watch and pop yourself down in your bunk after a tough grind, it's nice to think about what things will be like after the war, when the Merchant Marine will be carrying passengers again instead of troops, when they'll be having benefit performances on board for seamen and their families, and when a stage or radio star like Joan Brooks will be entertaining in the Grand Salon with a song like, If You Were the Only Girl in the World.
If you were the only boy in the world, and I were the only girl, nothing else would matter in the world today. We would go on loving in the same garden of Eden, just made for two, with nothing to mar our joy. I would say such wonderful things to you. There would be such wonderful things to do.
That you want to be sure that the letters get quickly and safely to their destination. And the way to guarantee that safety is always to use V-mail. V-mail is the safest as well as the fastest means. It's the only kind of personal mail that is always sent overseas by air. Food, blood plasma, guns, and ammunition must reach our men overseas, too. And you can help them get these by writing V-mail and saving valuable cargo space. Remember, write tonight and use V-mail, the smart and patriotic way.
Thank you, Joan. Petty Officer Tommy Mercer.
Night and day, you are the world. Only you beneath the moon and under the sun. Whether near to me or far, makes no difference, darling, where you are. I think of you day and night, night and day. Why is it so that this longing for you follows wherever I go? In the roaring traffic boom, or in the silence of my lonely room, I think of you day and night, night and day. Under the height of me, there's an oh such a hungry yearning burning inside of me. And this torment won't be free till you let me spend my life making love to you day and night, night and day.
The men who go to sea today are not the salty, crusty characters whose hoary portraits fill the pages of the Ancient Mariner. The men who go to sea today are hardy and tough-fibered, but it isn't a longing for the smell of oil or brine that makes them sign on. They go to sea today because there's a job to be done, a job that can't be done without them. This is a true story. Ours were the British Eighth Army when Monty, as we called him, pushed Rommel and the famous Africa Corps back across the whole of North Africa. I'm an American, of course, a Texan. But at that time, I was serving as a kind of liaison officer between an American railway operating battalion and Kent's regiment of the British Eighth Army. My job was to get supplies up to the front and keep on getting them there from one end of North Africa to the other. I had the same job in Sicily and in that hellhole of a beachhead we had at Anzio. Delivering supplies has been my job since the beginning of the war. Though I know how much enough of everything means to an army that moves. I know how much it means to the guys who fight in that army. I remember one night at Anzio when my assignment was to see that a train load of small arms fire got up to the boys at the front. We were in a wood-burning crump locomotive that we'd captured from the Trouts. And as we chugged along in the dark, one of the boys in the cab comes over to me and says,
"Hey, Rush, we're going all wrong here. We're way beyond the front line."
"That's what I'm beginning to think. So darn dark out here, I can't see any of the landmarks."
"Well, we better stop before we ride ourselves straight into a concentration camp. We're into German lines."
"Hey, you're not kidding, brother. Those are Heine mortars. Hey, Bill, get this thing in reverse in a hurry and give it the gun." A direct hit would have blown that whole train to kingdom come. Well, you can imagine how fast we backed down out of that position. But we couldn't go too fast, because that ammunition had to be delivered, and we still had to find the outfit that needed it. At the time, I didn't realize how badly it was needed. But about 3 miles back from when we went into reverse, we pulled up to a stop to have a look around. As soon as the wheel stopped rolling, a head popped up out of a foxhole and shouted the contact word.
"Hey, Joe!"
I called out the answer.
"Yeah, that's you, Rube?"
"You said it. Oh, brother, am I glad to see you. Come on, let's have that ammunition, son. We're down to our last three clips.
It's kind of hard to describe the way those men fell all over us that night, just because we brought them the stuff they needed to fight this war with. But they hugged us and kissed us as if we brought them a month's furlough. No, sir, I'll never forget it. It stands out in my mind almost as clear as the night I got hit, the night I got my one-way ticket out of the Army. We were delivering supplies again that night, only it was in trucks and jeeps this time. Three of us were on foot, leading the convoy through a field that had been mined by the Nazis. And all of a sudden... I can't tell you the name of the man who stepped on that mine, but we never saw him again. The man on the other side of me wasn't even scratched, and I got about 10 pieces of shrapnel in my arms, legs, and spine. And I was in the hospital over here from July to November. And the day before I got out, a friend of mine dropped in to tell me I was going to get a medical discharge from the Army. Well, I guess I got pretty mad. Yeah, I got mad because he was about to go overseas and I was about to become a civilian.
For crying out loud, Rog, stop walking around, will you? You're getting yourself all worked up.
Oh, pipe down.
The world hasn't come to an end, and besides, you've done your part. You can get a job in a defense factory.
Yeah,
or...
listen to me, son. I'll be back in action before you can get into it for the first time. That was just a brag when I said it. But after a while, I got to thinking about that trainload of ammunition we delivered to the front line at Anzio. And then it dawned on me that I could do the same kind of job with a merchant marine. So 6 days later, I was at the War Shipping Administration office with an assignment in my hand. My back wasn't strong enough for the Army, but I'd been at sea in 1929, and they needed experienced men now. So they took me on a ship. I made one trip in January and another in the spring, just in time for D-Day. You should have been there for that day. It was some sight. There were ships and boats and landing craft as far as you could see in any direction. And all those ships and boats were manned by full crews. And the men on shore who saw all that heavy stuff moving in to keep them well supplied, well, for a minute they kind of looked like those boys at Anzio, the ones that threw their arms around us for getting the stuff there. And believe me, the Merchant Marine really delivers the goods.
The man whose story we have so briefly presented just now is here in this studio tonight. His name is Roger Ferguson of Temple, Texas. And I consider it an honor to shake his hand and introduce him to our studio and radio audience.
Good evening, everybody. I'm not much of a speaker, but I would like to say that the Merchant Marine needs men, all experienced men it can get, especially deck and engine officers, able seamen, radio telegraphers, cooks and bakers. To win this war, hundreds and thousands of our ships will have to keep a steady stream of supplies going out to the far corners of the earth. And men must sail those ships. What I mean by that, experienced men. So if you're one of them guys, why don't you write or go down to the Office of the Recruitment and Manning Organization of the War Shipping Administration? If you live in one of our major port cities, or see your maritime union, or the United States Employment Service right away, and sign on again with the Merchant Marines, or just send their letter addressed to the Recruitment Director, Merchant Marines, Washington, D.C.
Thank you, Roger Ferguson. To the men who fight on land and sea, we respectfully dedicate the Marine Hymn. cooperation with the War Shipping Administration, Columbia has brought you Joan Brooks, Charles Simpson, Roger Ferguson, and through the courtesy of the U.S. Maritime Service Training Station at Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn, you heard vocalist Tommy Mercer and Lenny Gaynor and the Maritime Service Orchestra under the direction of Philip Lack. To all of you, we offer a cordial invitation to be with us again next week when the ship's whistle and the ship's bell signify it's maritime. Produced and directed by Charles Herbert and written by Robert Sloan. This is Joe Weeks speaking for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.